Call your attention this evening to the Old Testament. I want you to go to 2 Kings chapter 5. 2 Kings 5. Have you ever had a time in your life when maybe you were going through a deep, deep issue? And then maybe they did not even know it, but there was somebody that just said one or two little words, and all of a sudden that gave you hope. I've been thinking about this for the last two or three days. The stories that had come flooding in, people calling, talking to me about how that their lives were changed because of the preacher. Kenny Kuykendall was telling me that that his ministry was changed just because of one conversation. Johnny Daniels told me that his ministry changed the day that he met Don Richards. But one of the things that is unique about this story tonight is not that one of the key characters, a man named Naaman, is changed. He is started on this road not by someone of the magnitude of Brother Don. He is started on this road by someone that's a nobody. And there are times that people come into our lives and they just don't really consider themselves to be necessarily that important. But maybe something that they say changes the way that we think. I have heard people give testimonies. I remember it hadn't been, but maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago. Carl, how long ago was it that me and Deb went with you and Jeannie to that Gideon thing? Been about 5 years? About 4 or 5 years ago. Went to a dinner where the Gideons were putting on a supper, you know, slash fundraiser, slash encouragement, trying to promote the Gideon's International. And one of the men, probably the keynote, he was talking about how that he was to the point of suicide. And all of a sudden, he opened up a Gideon Bible in the hotel room where he was going to kill himself. And that moment, he read a verse, and it changed his life. And we can think of stories that we have heard in our Christian life. I can think of a lot of them over the years, and sometimes the details kind of get a little bit fuzzy. But I think that in our story that this girl, she's just somebody that was taken captive. The title of our message tonight is A Little Girl in a Foreign Land. What had happened was she lived in the northern part of Israel. And you know, after Solomon died, you know that the nation split into two. There was a north, there was a south. They had 10 tribes in the north that became known as Israel, and the two tribes in the south, Judah and Benjamin, that became known as Judah. Benjamin had such a smaller number that it was just kind of absorbed into the name. And so she was up north. Don't know exactly where up north. I just know that she was in the land of Israel. The king was a man named Jehoram. And the king of Syria, it's also called Aram, A-R-A-M in the Bible. He would send raiding parties into Israel, the north. And they would take this city and take that little town, and they would take, you know, that little area and this little area, and they would ransack the place, and then they would kill as many men as they needed to, and then they would take the younger men, and they would take the women and the children, and they would take them back to Damascus, and they would be sold on a slave block. And no doubt, this little girl is one of those slaves. Now, one of the things that I want you to understand is that slavery did not begin with the United States. Slavery has been around since the beginning of time. I know that, you know, there are people that like to think that we're the only ones that ever did it. We're not the only ones that ever did it, and we're one of the two countries that got rid of it. I don't know if you realize this, but right now in Afghanistan, it has been reinstituted. I read this week that on January the 7th, they had an edict from one of their Taliban strongmen, and they made it aware that it was against the law for girls to go to school and to basically have any type of freedoms that we would have like here in our country. And so what they did was they said it is now legal to do violence. It is now legal for slavery, and it is also now legal to repress women. And all I'm thinking is, thank God there's at least one little light on a hill called America. Because if Satan gets his way, everybody will be hurting. And so you've got slavery that was alive and well in 800 BC, and it's still alive and well in 2026. And so our story is that this girl was in the north. She was captured, taken back to Damascus, sold, and she was sold to a man named Naaman, who was a military man. Now, when we look at her, it says that in verse number 2 of chapter 5, it says that the Syrians had gone out by companies. That means they had groups, platoons, and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So Naaman had purchased her, and now this little girl, and we have no idea how old she is. We don't know if she's 8. We don't really know if she's 10. We don't know if she's 14. We just know that she is a young girl. She's a little maid. She's never been married. And so she is here in a strange land with strange people. Her people are either dead or they're gone in captivity somewhere. And so, after all of that background, I want us to think about this tonight. I want us to think about the name Naaman, and I want us to think about some mistakes and misunderstandings in the story. The name Naaman means to be pleasant. It means delightful. It's much like the word Naomi. I talked about Naomi last week or the week before. But Naaman, he was a handsome man. He was a man that probably was very popular. He had risen through the ranks of the Syrian army. And as he grew and his stature grew, people respected him, but then something happened. He was a leper. Now, the word leper is probably not the same type of leprosy that we think of today. It was probably some type of disease that would cause the swelling of the eyes and the swelling of the lips, and the face would probably begin to bloat. It was not the kind where that your digits would fall off, or the kind that ancient Israel talked about, where that you would have to scream, unclean, unclean, unclean. And so you've got this man, and he has had something that has come upon him. He would have never risen to those ranks had he had this his whole life. People would not have followed him. They would have said, we're not getting in a barracks with him. We will not do that. And so this is something that was given to him, and I believe given to him by the Lord. Why? So that ultimately we can see the glory of God in this story. And so what are some of the misunderstandings? I want you to look with me at verse number 5. The king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel, Jehoram, And it says, he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. The mistake that he made was this, that he thought that the healing could be bought. That's always a mistake, to think that we can buy our way out of anything. There are people that would give every last nickel that they have if they could have another 6 months to live, but they can't. There's a former senator from the state of Nebraska, and he stepped down, and it seems like that he's a man of principle. He stepped down because he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he talked about how that Washington, D.C. basically had been ruined by the amount of money that comes through that place. I mean, you've got lobbyists for everything, and they are giving people just money hand over fist. I just looked this afternoon and saw a story about a governor out west, not California, but a governor out west, and he has been given $14 million by one particular group of people. That's crazy money. And you've got people, and they think they can buy their way out of anything. Hadn't you ever heard the old saying, every man's got his price? Haven't you heard that? Heard a great story about that. How many of you have been keeping up with some of the Olympics? A few of you, okay. I don't know who's the ice skater. I don't know who the skier is. I don't know if they're both ice skaters. But I know there are two gals. I've used that word twice today. There are two ladies, and they are in the Olympics competing. One of them, or both of them, had Chinese parents. At least one of their parents was Chinese. One of the fathers escaped Tiananmen Square. Tiananmen Square, you remember that's where the guy was standing in front of the tank, and there was thousands that basically were killed. Her father and her were approached by the Chinese government, even though they live in California. And they said, we will give you millions of dollars if you will compete for China. And the guy that was her dad and had been in Tiananmen Square, he basically told him to go pound sand. He didn't care how much money they had. He loved America and he hated communism. The other young lady that was also competing, her mom was from China. She had been raised in California. They approached her and they said, we'll give you $6 million if you will compete for the China team. And they said, give me the money. And they competed, and it was all about the Benjamins, as the old saying goes. One said, no, we won't be bought. And the other one said, hey, we'll be bought. Can I tell you that the one that didn't take the money has won the gold? I love that. And so people have a price. And so Naaman thinks this. The king of Aram, king of Syria, he thinks this. And so he's like, we'll purchase it. That's a mistake. He didn't understand. There's a second one. Look with me at verse 6 and 7. It's not just the heathens that don't understand. You have a heathen person in Israel that doesn't understand. His name is Jehoram. So he has this letter. He comes. He brings the letter. And it says that he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. Now stop right there. You would probably misunderstand this as well. Somebody that you don't know comes to your house and says, hey, I've been told that you can heal me of my disease. I need you to do it. And what are you going to say? No, I'm not a doctor. Well, imagine if it was an enemy of yours that you had been at war with. And now the hostilities had subsided a little bit. And you're the king, and now you're thinking, man, this guy's trying to start a war. Look at verse number 7. He says in verse number 7, and it came to pass that when the king of Israel read the letter, that he rent his clothes. He started ripping his garments. He said, am I God to kill and to make alive? I'm not God. I can't do this, that this man does send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy. Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh the quarrel against me. In other words, he's trying to start a fight so he can be justified in coming and getting more of our people and taking more of our cities and more of our towns. And so he misunderstands. But not only that, but I want you to look with me at verse number 11. Naaman himself, the man that has this disease, it says, he was wroth. Now, what's he ticked off about? He's ticked off because the man of God has told him to do something that he thinks is stupid. Unsaved people do not understand the way that Christians and biblical people think. They think you're nuts. They think that anybody that would come to church on a Sunday night is probably crazy. They think that anybody that would give a tithe and pay for missions to go around the world, they think that you're crazy. They think that somebody that would pray to somebody that they can't see is crazy. They think all of those things. Naaman is a heathen. God has given him this disease, even though he had probably did not have it early on. He now has it. He has the reputation. He would like to not have it. He's been to doctors in Syria. They can't help him. But yet, he's here looking for help. And what does that stupid preacher say? I want you to go into Jordan and I want you to wash 7 times. And so, I don't want to do it. And so he's ticked. He said, behold, I thought he surely would come out to me. In other words, I'm somebody. I mean, my last name could be Trump. I mean, he's somebody. And he said, he's going to come out and stand and call on the name of God, strike his hand over the place, and recover me. So he misunderstands. So there's a lot of misunderstanding that's going on. But I want you to see something that is also in the text. And remember this, God's ways are not always our ways. You know, I've told you the old adage that man plans and God laughs. That's a Jewish saying. But I want you to see a second thing tonight. I want you to see a maid and manservants. A maid and manservants. Nobody's in the grand scheme of things. I mean, it's somebody that if you were in a mall, you would just kind of walk right on by and not even pay attention. You got a little girl, and all she's doing is trying to take care of a man's wife, trying to help her get dressed, trying to make her bed up, trying to pick up the bedroom, trying to cook a little bit. That's what she's doing. People just look right past her. And so it says in verse number 3 that she said unto her mistress, would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria. That's Elisha. That is the man that succeeded Elijah. His area of ministry was in the north. And he was in an area that is known as Samaria. And if he were in Samaria, he could be saved from this leprosy. And so we see this little maid, and when I think of her, I think of a missionary. I think that God takes people, sends them to the mission field, and they say a few words, and they visit a few people, and they love some people, and the next thing you know, those people, their eyes are opened, they see the glorious gospel, and they come to Christ, and everybody in their country thinks they're crazy, but all of a sudden, they have seen it. They have experienced it. This little girl knew about the miracles of Elisha. Oh, there's a prophet. Oh, if my Lord Naaman, if he would be in Samaria and would go see this man, he could be healed. But not only do we see the little maid that God uses, but I want you to see the manservants. Look at verse 13. And his servants came near. The men that took care of Naaman. And spake unto him, and they said, my father, they're doing this respectful. They're not going, come on, man, you stupid. These are not bosom buddies. These aren't frat guys that, you know, went to school together. No, there's respect here. They know that he is a mighty man. He's a man that's valiant. He's a man that, good soldier. And they said, my father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? In other words, if he would have said, I want you to give me that money, would you have not done that? If he would have told you to do some great military feat, would you have not done that? All he said was just go wash. Dip yourself in the Jordan 7 times. So they're trying to get him to understand that it's simple. Just do what the man said. Calm down. Is it going to hurt you to go get in the water? Is it going to? I know that there are rivers that you deem to be cleaner in Syria. He gives the names of a couple of them. He talks about the rivers of Abana and Phapar. Those are rivers that were known for their fresh water, and it was something that people used to love to go and visit those rivers because of their beauty and because of their freshness, the cleanness that was there. But Jordan is not like that. When we go to the land of Israel, we will go to the Jordan River and I will baptize some folks that want to get baptized. But it's not the cleanest river going. When I say, I'm not talking about pollution, I'm talking about mud. It's got a muddy bottom. If the rains have been coming, the dirt has kind of been coming into the water and it's kind of got it muddied up. I mean, it's not where you want to just go get a glass and dip it in it and just say, let's take a swig. That's not what it is. But these rivers in Syria were like that. And so he said, we got better rivers. I could have just done this and I could have saved my trip. But these manservants, if he would have said, do something great, you would have. Why don't you just do this? Why don't you just give it a shot? Just give it a try. And so he does that. And so we've seen the misunderstandings, we've seen mistakes, we've seen the maid and the manservants, but now I want you to see the man of God. Look with me back at verse number 8. And it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes. News traveled fast. Elisha, the prophet, hears that the king is frustrated. That he sent to the king saying, wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. And if there's a prophet in Israel, that means that there's a God in Israel. And so you've got this man of God, and he's going, it's okay. He's put you in a bind, but it's going to be okay. Isn't it wonderful when you got somebody that's got a calming effect? It's okay. Anxious? It's okay. And so you've got the prophet of God, and he says, send him to me. Look at verse number 10. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, that is the Naaman, saying, go wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. In other words, just go, dip, and it'll be okay. He doesn't like it. He doesn't understand it. His servants have to convince him to go do it. Look at verse 14. And in verse number 14, he says, then he went down, he dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. I'm sure he's out there in that water, and he's going under, and he comes up, and he's thinking, this is stupid. And he dips again. Can't believe that he's wanting me to do this. And I don't know if his servants are on the side going, 1, 2, 3. I don't know if they're doing it and counting up to 7 or not, but I know this. I know that the scripture says that on that 7th time that his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. In other words, just the way that he was when he was a little baby. When his parents named him Naaman and they looked at that little guy and he was handsome. He had brought them great delight. He was pleasant. And all through his years, and as he grew into to be a young man and he went into the service and he began to rise through the ranks, always such a handsome specimen, until he was smitten of God with this disease. But now it's returned. All of that handsomeness, the swelling in his lips and his eyes and his face are now gone. All of those splotches that are all over him, gone. Why? Because he was obedient to the word of God. And so we see that the man of God gave him the prescription. He followed the prescription and he was healed of his malady. But the question is, how did it all begin? This man that had such a massive problem went through all of the doctors in Syria, went through everything that he could possibly think of, and then there's a conversation that was not even originally with him. It was a little girl that had been taken captive. She was now a little maid for the lady of the house, his wife. And as they're talking, no doubt his wife is saying, you should have seen my husband when we got married. Oh, he was strong and he was handsome. He was such a beauty to look at. I felt as though I was honored to be able to become his wife. But he's got problems now. And that little girl goes, oh, would God that he were in Samaria. There is a prophet in Samaria that could help him. No doubt, Naaman's wife thought, hope? Hope? And she began to think, could it be? Could I have my husband back without this dreaded disease? And so she says, Naaman, let me tell you what my little slave girl told me. Naaman says, well, let me go talk to the king. And the king goes, well, that'd be great. Hey, take this money. Use this to pay the king or whoever he sends you to. But it all started because there was one little girl that knew what God had done in her experience, and it was not that vast. But she knew that there was a preacher. She knew that there was a God that this preacher served, and he had the power to do anything that he wanted. Now, when you read through the miracles of Elisha, you find all kind of things. I preached probably 5-10 years ago about the axe head that did float. I mean, you got one of the school of the prophets, which was a Bible college student, and he's borrowed an axe. He didn't have enough money to have his own. And he's chopping wood. They're trying to build a little house so that they can have Bible class. And as he's chopping, all of a sudden the head goes off of the handle and flies out into the Jordan River. And he's like, alas, it was borrowed. And I mean, one miracle after another miracle after another miracle. Elisha, he asked God when his ministry began, let me have a double portion. He told Elijah that. He said, I want a double portion of your power. If you read through, test me on this. You read through the miracles of Elijah, and I believe that you'll find 8. You read through the miracles of Elisha, and you will find 15. And you go, well, that's not double. But there was something that happened 100 years after Elisha had died. He had been buried in a cave, and there was a caravan that was coming along, and they had a young man that died. They thought, what are we going to do with him? I mean, we can't leave him here for the animals to get him, so we'll put him in a cave. They threw his body into this cave, and there were bones that was in there. They had no idea whose bones they were. They were just old bones. And when that boy's body hit those bones, they were the bones of Elisha. And he revived and come running out of that cave saying, wait a minute, I'm alive. That was the 16th miracle in the life of Elisha. Check it out. See if I'm right or not. So how did it start? It started because one little girl that had been taken into slavery, and she now is telling and testifying of the greatness of her God. You never know when one little word from you is going to encourage somebody and could change a life. God can use your words and my words, your kindness and my kindness, to do something in the heart of other people. I say, let's let him.